birthday party?
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. All my Abracadamets are getting stuff done, son, and having a good time doing it. Yes, I do want to apologize real quick. I am about 2 days late here on the podcast, and it's because I've been extremely busy. This time of year is a very busy time of the year with me, with a lot of holiday parties and stuff going on. So I do want to apologize. I'm not complaining, though. I'm not complaining because I'm 100% so glad to be working and to be busy. I'm very blessed. Hey, but one thing I do want to complain about, though, are these... It's disgusting how we have became a society of clicks, views, and likes. It is. It's gross. The other day, there was this video that was suggested, that Facebook suggested I watch. And it was popcorn, and this family were outside, and they were showing you how to make popcorn over a fire, you know, or a fire pit. And they're putting the popcorn in, the kernels, and they put the chocolate, and they put the butter and the peppermint and all this good stuff, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and it never works. And at the end of the video, they here it is, and they go to pour it out, and it's just the goo of mess. And it's literally like 10 minutes. And the video is designed to get you to sit there for the entire 10 minutes just to be completely disappointed. And I look up, and it's under this guy named Justin Flom. He's like a social media magician, and he's supposed to prank, which he called that a prank. That's not even a prank. That's a straight up waste of people's time. There's no payoff at the end at all. Nothing. Not even a ha ha ha. Just so Justin can get the views. So Justin, you got me, buddy. You got me. And I just want to say, I hope you trip over a cactus and get a yeast infection. Okay? Because you wasted my time. It's gross. So, but I would suggest this. If you do want to spend good quality time, listen to the Abracadam Podcast. And listen to this episode, because this is going to be a damn good episode, guys. But before we get into the episode, let's give a big shout-out to today's sponsors. This episode is also brought to you by Will's Towing. Located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, guys, no one likes to be broke down on the side of the road. It's awful. It sucks. But don't panic. If this does ever happen, give Will Roberts a call at 865-272-5300 and let Will Roberts take care of your towing needs. Will will come pick it up, and he will park that car anywhere you need him to park it. If you want that car set in your living room, Will will put it in your living room. Also, we've all seen those tow truck drivers that show up, and they look kind of sketch. You know, like they may have been touching a possum before they came up to you. You know what I mean? One of those guys. You never have to worry about that at Will's Towing. Everybody who works at Will's Towing is clean, safe, and very friendly to deal with. So if your car breaks down, you need a towing service at all, give Will Roberts a call at Will's Towing. That's 865-272-5300. All right, Abracadamets. Now, today's guest is someone who I've known for a few years now. I've been so lucky to get to share the stage with her several times at the wonderful Asheville Vaudeville shows in Asheville, North Carolina. She's very interesting. You could tell she's very, very artsy and very knowledgeable about her craft. So if you will, Abracadamets, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with belly dancer, glass walker, and vaudeville performer Claire Dima. All right, we've got Claire Dima here on the Abracadam Podcast today. How you doing, Claire?
I am well, thank you, Danny.
Well, I tell you what, Claire, I have known you for a few years now, and I've had the pleasure of sharing the stage with you multiple times. But if you do not mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the Abracadam listeners?
Okay, hello, Abracadam listeners. This is Claire Dima. I have had the pleasure of working with Annie many times over the last several years because he makes a trip over the mountains to come to Asheville and do Asheville Vaudeville with us. I am one of the board members of Vaudeville, which means I have the thankless task of helping organize the shows, and trying to format performers and get them to send us promotional information. I am a belly dancer and I do some other weird stuff like sticking fire in my mouth and putting my feet on glass.
That's right. You do. I mean, you do a lot of things. Now, well, let's do this because you are a very talented performer, very talented entertainer. But let's start with this because this is interesting. It's belly dancing. How did you get into that? Where did it all begin for you?
Okay, the gory truth is it started with an attempted murder. I
Whoa,
was
whoa, whoa. Really? Wow. Okay. So now the Abracadabra podcast has turned into one of these murder podcasts. So this is going to get really good now. A whole new audience. Let's hear it.
So when I was in college, so many good stories start that way. When I was in college, I was in a relationship with a person who was incredibly paranoid schizophrenic. And he decided that it was his job to isolate me from the world, and had an intense amount of paranoia about me interacting with anybody else at all. And it culminated in me being totally isolated, and dosed on LSD for a couple years. And it was not great. So after an attempted murder, I managed to get away from this person. And while I was going through therapy and recovery, the therapy person said, you're doing good. You're not disassociating. You're not like blaming yourself for this person's mental illness or their behavior or the choices he made. You're pretty clear-eyed about why what happened happened. But you need to make sure that you're not sitting around idle anytime. So you need to find something to do. Just give yourself a schedule and build a healthy routine. And I was previously a martial artist in high school, but I screwed my knees up pretty bad doing that. So I really couldn't go back to martial arts classes because it's kick intensive and my knees don't like those anymore. But I was lucky enough to be at a liberal arts college where one of the reference librarians taught belly dance classes for $5 a pop in the gym on Wednesday nights. So, I decided I would give it a shot, and it was really, really fun. And within 6 weeks, I was like, God damn, I'm going to be a belly dancer for life. And my teacher is still, my first teacher is still teaching. I actually went 3 weeks ago and performed with her current batch of students who are college students at the place I went to college 20 years ago. So my first teacher like really got me going and then pointed me towards people because when you're teaching in a college setting, you're getting a new batch of people every year and it's hard to like move people up the skill pile. So she pointed me towards a studio in Asheville that had like dance classes every night of the week, and I started going there and doing work trade in order to pay for my classes because I was a broke ass, just graduated college student with a history degree and no real job. And I took classes there for years and years, and eventually joined the troop, a troop that was based out of that studio. So that's the beginning of it.
So, okay, first of all, there's a lot of stuff to talk about right there in what you said. The okay, well, to back up, thank God that you did nothing happened to you in being, in the, tough relationship like that situation you were in. I've known a few people that have been in relationships like that, and it can go very badly, very, very badly.
Very, very badly. I think shit goes sideways real quick when you get people with paranoia, narcissism, and a real need to control. And he had family issues and all kinds of shit. It's kind of amazing he was as highly functional as he was. I know of at least two other women that he assaulted following me. And he really needs some intense health care. It's part of the reason, like, I have always had like socialist inclinations, but it's like, he needed healthcare that wasn't available to him, and his paranoia like took over his life and mine for a while.
Yeah. And you know, I mean it's a sad thing, and especially when you look at mentally ill people in our country. First of all, in the world, mentally ill people have always been shit on. They've never been treated properly in the history of the world, okay? And even now in the United States, they're still not. It could be better. It could absolutely be a little better. And it's at least you do recognize, you know, he did have a health problem instead of him, you know. But still on the flip side, at least, you know, you came out and you found something that you were good at out of this. Now you said that you were in martial arts before too.
I took Taekwondo for 4 years in high school. I don't look like it now, but I used to be a relatively badass bench presser as well, because I took
Nice.
martial arts with a bunch of gym head college boys, and they were kind of like, hey, bet 16-year-old can't pick this up, and they'd like just load up the bar and be like, can you press that, and be like, sure. So I might be a little competitive.
That's awesome though. And I also think there is something to the performing arts and martial arts. There's a connection there. I think maybe
Oh, totally.
I think there must be something like there's something about mastering something, you know, the challenge of something there that is connection. Because you know, when I was a kid, I golden glove box when I was a kid, and but now even though I don't have the time right now, but I wish I had the time to even do jujitsu, Brazilian jujitsu, you know. And it's not so much that my, you know, I'm going to get out there and roll around with people in the streets. No, but it's you know, it's almost like a chess match. There's something really interesting about it. It's an intelligent feel to it, you know.
Yeah, and there's that like exchange when a really good sparring match, like that exchange of like fast response, and like you in a good sparring match, you really understand, your partner on a really deep, very basic level. And it's like that kind of understanding is is only matched by like for in my world with troop mates, when you've practiced and drilled together enough that like you can see your dance partner's body begin a movement, you know exactly where she's going and what's about to happen, and you can follow along with her because you've invested the time with each other and you've invested the training with each other. And it gets to be real intense.
You know, that brings me to a past guest that I've had on here, Ashley Cincinte. She's a professional boxer, and she used the term body awareness. So, and I bet that's, you know, happens a lot in belly dancing as well.
Yeah, and especially with belly dancing, and I'm somewhere on the OCD spectrum, so I'm body aware in like multiple ways, which gets to be weird because my brain occasionally notices, hey, your spine is doing a strange thing and your left foot can feel like a piece of grit on the floor, and you also have to be keeping in time with the music. So be a part of it is the training, and like your body is engaged with the music in a trained fashion, and but your senses are there calling awareness to your surroundings. And it's like that whole thing where you're trying to perceive, on several different levels, is definitely it's challenging because you've got to keep them all in focus and all in balance, and that's always fun.
Now, but belly dancing is like super ancient, goes way back, right? Do you know any history on it, anything? Maybe you can shed the light on me. I'm dumb.
Well, there's a lot of conjecture and there's a lot of intelligent conjecture, but one of the struggles with anything that's based in a folk art is that there is not necessarily a lot of documentation. We can make intelligent conjecture, and second wave feminism really did a lot of scholarly work on Middle Eastern dance traditions, because in like European cultures, there are continuous dance traditions that have come down from the ancient times, But the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church really did not do a lot to preserve dance traditions, and there was a lot of repression in dance. Like, so, you know, in America, we don't really have, you know, a singular dance tradition. You know, not only are we a country of people who came here from elsewhere, but like, so the native folk in North America have like ongoing dance traditions, and theirs is an unbroken line, in a lot of ways. So, you know, there are like living dance traditions. Belly dance is not that. One of the things about belly dance in America is it's kind of turned into, you know, a mutt form, and it's an amalgam of continuous dance traditions that have existed in North Africa and in the Middle East, and over into India and Pakistan. But what we do in America is mostly not a culturally specific form. Like, I've never been able to take from a source culture teacher, and that would be like a Moroccan teacher or a Lebanese teacher, specifically to study and integrate myself into that dance style, which is, you know, kind of, it's sad for us, but it's also kind of exciting because, you know, I'm allowed a lot of exploration. You know, as long as I'm respectful of cultural roots and I'm not like doing, you know, things that would be disrespectful of the mother culture. So there's conjecture that like what we would now recognize as belly dance movements, existed back to the time of Herodotus. So we're talking like back in the Greek writers in the golden age of Greece. Because there are descriptions in Herodotus of dancers, quote unquote, sinking to the floor with trembling thighs, and he describes a shimmy move that's still extant. Like when, as a dancer, when I read the description, I'm like, oh, he's talking about a level descent shimmy, which is where when you start a shimmy, which is just the hip up and down repeating movement and get your fringe going. And then you bend your knees, you can sink down to the floor with that movement and keep it going the whole time. So Herodotus described that movement. It probably wasn't to music that we would recognize as music that still exists in the Middle East, or any living culture. But the movements, like, there's only so many ways that a body can move. So the movements have probably come down in a lineage. The cultural context of those movements has really changed. And there's a lot of people who say like, oh, this was an ancient birthing dance, or this was the ancient praise dance of the, you know, Babylonian goddess Inanna. And like, okay, we can't prove that. It makes sense to our like Western brains, our academic brains, to explore that. Most of the dancers I know who are historians, and a lot of the dancers I know do reenactment. Like I know a lot of the people I know because we are in a medieval reenactment group, because we're interested in culture and history, and it's a good place to learn about it as a hobby. But we can't verify a lot of the things that we would think would be correct. So people have gotten a lot more careful in the last like 15 or so years about saying this is an ancient birth dance. And the whole this is an ancient birth dance is kind of bullshit, because every serious belly dancer I know who's had a baby has had to have some intense medical interventions. It's not great for birthing babies. But the way we do it in America is also very much not the way it's done in the Middle East, because America is not comfortable with women having jiggly fat. America wants its dancers to be skinny. Yeah. So we tend to constrict our muscles rather than relax them to create motion. And it's kind of the exact opposite of Middle Eastern technique. Yeah. And that's a vast generalization, but.
Isn't that weird? That's so weird that let me ask you this. Do you think that's changing a little bit though, Claire? Do you think like.
A little bit. Yeah.
Gotcha. Because I mean, it's interesting when you do go back and you look at what American culture considered, you know, sexy women had to look like this, or they had to look like that. And, you know, jiggly jelly fat, you know what I mean? I mean, belly fat is, you know, to me, that's natural. You know what I mean? It's so, you know, it's sexy. Let me ask you, so there's a possibility though that some type of form of belly dancing could have been going on in several different places at the same time in the world.
Oh yeah. Well, and what we call belly dancing, like, you know, like I said before, is there's a lot of different cultures that it springs from. But certainly, like, there's like a hip-based dance form has existed in like the Fertile Crescent area, like since the time of the Sumerians. Like, there are poems in cuneiform, like praising the skill of a dancer and the description of their hips. I don't have that quote to hand in my memory. I did the Herodotus one, but like the descriptions of what we would like look at today and describe as a belly dance contained movement, that's definitely like, from the beginning of writing. So that kind of movement has happened, since before writing existed. And when you start like actually like digging down into the posture and the formation of belly dance movement, the posture is much more relaxed than say like ballet, which is a real extended, locked, engaged up posture. The actual posture you have to make for belly dancing involves like your feet really loose and relaxed, spread wide on the floor, your hips in a neutral position, your legs in a slightly bent position, your spine active, and your lungs open. When you put yourself into a basic belly dance posture, you realize that it's like it's an actual like aligned posture, unlike we're used to having like being at computers and hunched over. So it's a really functional posture to get work done. So if you're doing anything like gardening work, the basic belly dance posture is really good to be in, because it puts you in a ready posture to like bend and maneuver.
So now, do you do like some other things like yoga and stuff like that? Does that
Yeah.
help
Oh
out
yeah.
with dancing?
Yeah. I hike a lot. I do a little bit of yoga. I have a spinal irregularity, but it's like anybody who moves a lot, you find what your body likes and you go there. But
Well, it's also though, this is one of those things to where it's a healthy thing to do.
oh yeah.
It's somewhat of an exercise, I'm guessing. Now, and this is something that now, well, let me ask you this. Okay, so you found a troupe and they kind of tuck you in when you got into belly dancing. Is this the same troupe? Are you with the same troupe? Are these same people that you work with today?
I still work with all those people. Well, those people that still live here. It's one of the things about an artistic endeavor of any kind is if you've got seven people in a group, somebody's going to need to move because they got to go take care of grandma. Somebody's going to lose their job and have to move to go find another job. So it's really hard to keep a live performance troupe together. And the troupe I was in, it was there for years before I joined. I was there as a student in my first capacity there. And then, we went through like several different iterations, because a bunch of dancers decided they didn't like the artistic vision and they left and went and did other stuff together. So it evolved. But yeah, I still work with several of the musicians who I know from those days, and the lady who was the artistic spearhead and organized all the business stuff. She and I are still very, very good friends, and I'm like godparent to one of her babies, and she's godparent to mine. So it's got ongoing relationships there.
So, okay, now, but you do other things, and some people who may not be familiar with belly dancing or never actually seen a live belly dancing performance, you, Claire, you'll take like the big sword and balance it, right? You'll balance it up. And now, how tough is that? How long does it take to be able to do something like that and dance?
So with anything, balancing stuff on your head is a traditional like long-standing belly dance skill, and it goes back to like that whole ancient heritage thing we were talking about a second ago, because being able to put shit on your head and carry it, that's like before we had the wheel and we had wheelbarrows to move stuff around. Putting stuff on your head and carrying it is one of the ways that you can move the biggest load. So, you know, it's an agricultural skill, and you know, people who are still doing like traditional agricultural, you know, practices, they carry on their head and shoulders a lot. They're not putting it on their backs a lot. So putting stuff on your head and carrying it is a thing that every belly dancer learns at some point if they stick with it at all. And there are a lot of traditions of like, I don't do a shamadan because I don't do Egyptian style, but shamadan is a big, it's a literally a big candelabra. You put a candle, you put a tree of candles on your head and you dance, and it's specifically for weddings. So that shit's cool. Because you've got all the like 24 lit candles on your head.
Wow, 24 lit candles.
Yeah, I've seen some huge shamadans, and it's like it's a candelabra like grandma had on the table at, you know, on formal dinners, and but it's you balance it on your head. So head balancing for stuff is pretty traditional. I started with a bag of beans. And part of it is like you only start trying to balance stuff after you've been dancing for a couple years, because part of the dance technique is you've got to learn how to isolate things. So you want your hips to be able to move without your head showing that your hips are moving. You know, so you've got to be able to like isolate your ribs and your spine and your shoulders out of it while your hips are moving. So you don't try to do that for a little while because you've got to like develop the core strength for it to be successful. But you know, my teacher started us by bringing in just bags of black beans and putting them on our heads, and if they fell off, they fell off, and they didn't hurt anybody. A lot of people start, you know, first prop to balance is baskets, like a big round flat bottom basket. You know, so you do that, and it's very pastoral and it's adorable. You can put flowers in them and throw flowers at your audience and stuff, and that's fun. Swords are usually not the first thing that people begin balancing. And the swords that people balance with are specifically meant for that. Like they balance not only along their length, but from side to side. Like if you try balancing like just a, you know, a saber, a lot of us have like cavalry sabers sitting around that are family heirlooms. Those will flop over side to side. The blade will fall flat. You want it to stay up on the back of the blade. You know, so the specifically a scimitar, like which is a, you know, a specific, you know, kind of cavalry sword that's used in the Middle East ceremonially still. There are vendors you can get like cavalry scimitars from specifically for balancing that are made for that.
So
But
now, is it sharp? Is it are
yep.
those? So it is
Yeah,
sharp.
mine are real.
Man. Now, do you think they did that? Was it to, I mean, to just add like a something else to impress the audience
Well,
originally?
there's different kinds of sword dancing. So there's some that's traditional, and there's an Egyptian form of sword dancing that is like specifically like very martial. It's like it's a man's martial dance. So I don't do it because I haven't had anybody who can teach me how to do it right. But there has been a tradition for as long as we've got writing. Like Europeans were going to the Middle East and observing the dancers, the professional dancers there. And there would be like specific houses that you went to that were kind of the equivalent of a, you know, a residential theater. You know, it's the dancer's house, and they've got a courtyard and a big room set up, and the musicians play there. And there would be the soldiers. And the Ottoman Empire would go to those houses and see the dance performances. Now, one thing about soldiers is they're armed, and there's a bunch of them. And if they're a little drunk and they decide that they want to mess with the dancer, you don't want them to be armed because that makes them more dangerous. So one theory about where some of the more entertainment and less martial forms of sword dancing came from is when the soldiers come into a show. You take their like, oh sir, may I take your cloak? Like you've got a you know, a coat check girl at the front door, and they collect all the swords so that the soldiers who are getting drunk and disorderly in the performance house are not going to also be armed and give you trouble. So that means that the dancers are in control of all the weaponry in the house. And then she can make fun of the soldiers, like, oh, I've got your sword, your big manhood thing. We're going to make fun of you here, phallus symbol. All that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of the sword dancing is very playful, because you're showing to the you know, the soldier, I've got your sword here, I'm in charge. So a lot of it is really silly. Yeah, so you know, there's the we're gonna make fun of these big strong men who think that they're so tough. Yeah, so
That's
there's a
clever.
tradition of that.
That's clever. I didn't know that. So, you
Yeah,
know, what's a
these.
good way how to maybe hell, maybe I could figure something out to deal with hecklers, drunks. There we go. Let's
Yep. Yeah, no, I'll be your security, Danny.
That's awesome. Well, let me bring this up because that's where I met you through Asheville Vaudeville. And you know, you are a big part of Asheville Vaudeville, which is such an incredible, incredible thing going on in Asheville, North Carolina, folks. If you're ever there, you have to see an Asheville Vaudeville show. But how did you get involved with that?
Well, when vaudeville was more based out of like toy boat community art space, which we lost
I got to
because
perform
both
there
of us.
once. I got to
Oh
do
my
one time
God.
there, and that was fantastic. I loved it.
It was the best. It was like a shoestring. If anybody out there missed toy boat community art space, like here's the template for making a great space that really creates a lot of fun for your community. Get a big empty room that used to be industrial warehouse. That's got a high ceiling. You put a plywood stage at one end and you put a bar that mostly sells soda pop and like two beers at the other end. You're on a shoestring kids circus school out of there with people teaching tumbling. You get some other people who are jugglers and they come in and teach a class. You te have some people who are aerialists and they teach a class. So like what Toy Boat was an empty room that we could all do our stuff in. You know, and they had reasonable rates so that we could all afford to rent space there and practice. They had a good sound system, and they do a show, they do a kids show, like the kids circus class would do a thing, and their parents would come, and it was real cute. And then later on that night, there would be a rave. You know, so it was just like it was a real rough, raw, bare bones room that, you know, was accessible. And there happened to be a lot of people in town at the time who wanted to do stuff. So, Asheville Vaudeville had been going in various iterations. I think it's been going for about 17 years now.
God, that
And
is
of course,
awesome.
we've taken time off during the pandemic, like everybody. You know, it's been kind of a couple different forms. And the dance studio I was involved in, they knew people who did vaudeville and put me on the mailing list. And at some point, I just started showing up with my friends and doing stuff. So the various dance groups I've been in have performed there. And then, you know, as it became more just me as a soloist, then I just started performing solos at vaudeville more.
Now, is whenever before you started performing on Asheville Vaudeville, were you doing like the, I guess, glass walk in and stuff like that?
No, that's all the fault of like the dance troupe Rockamundi that was based out of the studio I went to. We did Ren Fairs, and like through Ren Fair, a lot of stuff gets thrown at you. They say, "Hey, do you guys know any stilt walkers? We need some stilt walkers." And we go, "Yeah, we walk on stilts." And then that weekend, we made stilts and learned how to walk on stilts. We learned like fire because of that. And at some point I saw somebody walk on glass and I'm like, hot damn, like, you know, I don't care about pain. I'll do that. And, you know, I went and took a class from a sideshow person and, you know, made myself a couple of glass walking pieces. You know, so it's like those things are like didn't come like directly through belly dance, but more just being in the performance world. And like belly dance, like in America has kind of been connected to the sideshowy and the burlesque side of things. Because especially like in the last like 50 years, like in the 1950s and 60s, belly dance started to leave like the ethnic neighborhoods. You know, and there's been more of the like, you know, oh, this is a performance art that like we can do outside of this specific like, you know, traditional cultural context. And so the belly dance world is full of people who like doing other weird shit for fun.
Well, I like I said, I think it's awesome, and I think it goes great with the Asheville Vaudeville shows. And it started off there. Now, what happened to the toy boat, though? Is it
It well it the building got bought by the guy who brought the French Broad Brewery. So the French Broad Brewery, in case you give a care about local businesses, the French Broad Brewery is no longer a local business. It's bought by a guy who's from my original hometown of Carrboro. And he decided he wanted to get into the Asheville beer craze several years ago. So he brought the French Broad Brewery. He bought that business, which happened to be located in the building that Toy Boat was in. He also bought the building and decided he was going to kick Toy Boat out because he wanted the space for a tasting room. And his statement to the newspaper was, we think that, like, you know, this space could be more conducively used in other ways because the neighborhood is improving, blarg, blarg, blarg. I'm like, listen, motherfucker, you could just say you want to gentrify the space and you don't think a bootstrap circus school is a worthy neighbor to your brewery. But, you know, he was going to improve the neighborhood, so he kicked out Toy Boat.
Oh, God, that sucks. Because, yeah.
I'm not better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys, though, have found some other great venues to perform at, you know, the Gray Eagle. That's a really good place.
Yeah, we love the Gray Eagle. And we're blessed in Asheville to still come on pandemic, go away so that these venues survive. We've got a lot of really good rooms to see diverse art at. And we've lost several rooms just because everything's gentrifying around here. And it's hard to find a space big enough to put a venue in. But like we've got the Gray Eagle, which is awesome and supportive and lovely. And, you know, they're kind of the vaudeville home for now. And the White Horse in Black Mountain, their stage is wonderful. And one of the benefits of the White Horse is the ceiling's high enough that we can have aerialists there and a pole dancer. So if anybody wants to come do stuff on a pole, we can have them there. Super cool. So yeah, we intend on like trying to keep doing stuff at the White Horse and bounce back and forth to the Gray Eagle as the primary home.
You know, now the Mothlight, that's closed though, right? It's not there no more, right?
Yeah, but I think the folks who had the Mothlight, they've got a young family and they were intending on kind of cycling out anyway, which is sad because it was a great room.
It was a great room.
It's like it's big enough to really feel, you know, get that like good solid like crowd excitement feeling, but small enough you could actually communicate with everybody. And there is like an urban arts collective in there, different world something, but there's still a performance group there. They're just doing more like poetry slam kind of stuff, last I checked. So it's more like a headquarters office space, performance space for them. And they're not really, renting out time on it like Mothlight did. So it's gotcha. Not like an open stage anymore.
Now one thing I want to say this is, yeah, I love seeing, and as much as possible too, is I platforms for variety acts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think variety acts have a set home. Like comedians can run to the comedy clubs, and even magicians have places that they can go that's specific just to magic. Not as much as comics, but they do have them. But there's several other acts out there that they don't have that. So they almost have to create a good space to perform on. And I will say this, I think this is one good thing that has came out of America's Got Talent, because I'm not a big fan of the show. But one thing I will say that I think has came out of it is it has introduced to the public that there are other performing arts.
Yeah.
There's other things, you know? Yeah.
Well, it's like that was a thing that, like, you know, the early vaudeville stage, it was all variety shows. And then it kind of like, you know, there was various different, like, you know, Ed Sullivan was for all intents and purposes a variety show. You know, people like that. And it's great because it's like, okay, you don't like belly dancing, fine. There'll be a slapstick comedian on in 5 minutes and you can survive that long.
There's something for everybody, and so I think there's a good future though now for the variety show to come back and come back strong. I've never, you know, knock on wood, I don't know, but every Asheville vaudeville show that I've performed on, it's been a fantastic crowd. You know,
and our crowd is great because like they're not there looking for, you know, like a screaming, jumping up and down kind of situation. Our crowd is like, you know, I appreciate the fact that our crowd is people who want to see interesting things that they might not necessarily, stumble across. Like, they come specifically because it's a variety show. It's like, I wouldn't necessarily go to a comedy club, because that's like, it's not, it's not a medium I'm familiar enough with to feel like I could make an intelligent choice
of what you need to see.
Yeah. It's like, there's great music in every genre, but I don't know enough about reggae to know who the good reggae performers are. So, it's like, I like that, like, it's people tend to come specifically because they're exploring. And most everybody who does vaudeville also does other stuff. So it's like, okay, you like Danny's set, we can point you towards Danny's show later on. So it's like, it's kind of like, it's the buffet. You can try every art form out.
And I love that. I do absolutely love it. And, as a performer, Asheville, anytime you do a show in Asheville, especially Asheville Vaudeville, as a performer, if you want to record your set and get fantastic video, that is a great place to do it. Because, like I said, the crowd that comes to see those shows, they're just the sweetest human beings ever. And this is something else. So I want to say this, because you are also lucky, Claire, that you live in a town like Asheville, North Carolina, that is artsy fartsy. People respect, at least in the downtown area, they respect the performing arts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's kind of a mixed blessing. And this is where I get all ranty and political for a second. It's been interesting to be here for 20 years and be in the art scene for most of that time. Well, I've been here since 1997, but I've been in the art scene a lot since 2000. So 21 years in the performing art scene here. And it's gone through a lot of ups and downs, but one thing it has never, the performing arts specifically, have never received any kind of public backing. There's not public support from any kind of local grants that are not specifically targeted to stuff that is more shoestring. There was a lot of activity here that was all self-funded. And with prices going up, a lot of the people who did those self-funded, more wacko, weird, exploratory kinds of performance, people are moving away because, you can't survive on, the wages that you can earn here and have enough time to make any good art. And like, the teaching opportunities are getting harder here because, like, we've lost studio spaces. Like, it's, I'm literally like, my dance partners and I are like getting together in my living room because I can't afford to rent any space. And the pandemic is like part of things in the last couple of years, but, it's been really frustrating because, like, over the years, like, the local arts council has always come to the performing arts community, and they do a big gala like once a year called the Color Ball, where they have a big party, and like, it tends to be themed around a color. So it'll be like the red ball one year, or the blue ball, which everybody snickered about. And then they come to the performing artists once a year and say, hey, will you donate a performance? And then, like, the local arts council doesn't provide any support for things that performing artists need. Like, there's no public access black box theater. And there's no, no, like, actual really? Community theater. Yeah, and it's...
That is so strange.
It's so weird.
For a town like Asheville.
Yeah, well, and we're real bitter about it over here. Like, there's much ranting done after shows about it. So we feel pretty good about how much we've been able to make our own way. And a lot of that is just, people being really motivated because, artists are people who have to create and will create no matter what. We're lucky to have, venues that you can do like real shoestring budget stuff in still. Like the auditorium, like a lot of great art happens at the auditorium. Because you can, it's not a big room. You're not going to destroy yourself if your show flops there, so it's a place you can explore.
That's great.
In my dreams, like, we would have like a community access, community center theater, that young performers, and there's also, it's hard to like be a young performer right now Because I was really fortunate, and there was places that like people who were already doing things could like bring me in and nurture me, and I could see how things worked and what to expect and how to talk to a venue and what was, you know, a standard of behavior and payment and security, all those things that, you know, go into being a performer and actually surviving doing it. You know, it's hard right now because, you know, trying to like connect with young performers is hard with not being able to teach. And there's also just not as many events happening that are more shoestring, because with everybody wanting to come to Asheville because of the art scene, you know, we're having like outside production companies coming in and doing stuff. So they're importing performers. Like one of my friends who lives in Charlotte, like got hired to come and do an aerialist show in Asheville because the people said they couldn't find any aerialists in Asheville. I'm like, y'all, there are three aerial schools in Asheville.
Oh my goodness.
So you know, part of it is like we're all discombobulated, and like our independence and is kind of our strength, but it's also kind of our weakness because there's not really a single place that you come to find people here.
That really sucks, and I hate the fact that there isn't. It would be Asheville, I think, would be the perfect place to open a variety club.
Yeah, yeah. I would. Oh God, vaudeville wants to so bad.
I mean, I think that would be the perfect place. And it blows my mind, because this is the other thing, is the talent in Asheville it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. All you guys, you know, I'm talking about you, Claire, April, Keith, you know, all of you guys, everybody I've met on the show there, you know, the talent is there, you know, and the creativity, man, is, you know, that is one of the, I'll be honest, sometimes if I'm on a variety show, I don't always get out and watch all the acts. Okay. Sometimes I'm in the green room running my mouth, you know what I mean? But Asheville Vaudeville is one of those shows, like, I got to get out and see what they're going to do. I want to see what they're going to do, you know? And it's a shame if you live in Asheville and you don't know about this, you know?
Well, it's always interesting. Like, it's been a struggle to like communicate to people that we're here. And then occasionally, like, we get covered in like the Citizen Times, which is, you know, the mass distribution newspaper. It's the Gannett, you know, affiliate newspaper here. The one time they did a write-up on vaudeville, we packed out like two shows, totally sold out, like double nights, and people were going like, oh, we're from St. Petersburg, Florida. There's nothing like that. This there. I'm like, actually, there is. There you just don't is. Know about it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's like, man, advertising is hard now without there being like a central local newspaper that everybody reads. I mean, the internet's kind of shot us in the foot as much as it's also created other opportunities.
I'm about to go on my old man box, you know, but it's true, let's just go say 15 years ago. We're going to go back just 15. All right. You could get a marketing degree 15 to 20 years ago, and it's like, okay, you know. But now a marketing degree in 2021 is like a damn, you know, you're a doctor, because you have to know all these crazy things. And I don't even think they've completely figured it out yet, because the world of marketing is changing so rapidly. You know, it's just crazy. And so I have no clue how to advertise. I'll just be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know how to do it. You know, I every opportunity that I get, and it's not because I'm full of myself or pompous or, you know, but if I'm performing somebody, I let them know, hey, what town are you at? Oh, well, come see me in this town. You know, I'm going to be here in this town. Bring your friends. You know, I still try to do the word of mouth way. But I mean, if you try to advertise on Facebook, you don't, and like, especially if you do it like on the business ads, you don't know for a fact how many people actually really saw that ad. You're just going what Facebook told you. You know, and this is the other thing, Claire, is like back in the day, there was a newspaper. Everybody read the newspaper. Now there's so many other things to look at and read. Our attention spans are so short. It's just, I have no clue how to advertise. I don't get it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's created opportunities, but it's like certainly also like created that limitation. And like, that's just, you know, I don't know, when we're advertising, we're like, okay, we got to go to the Mountain Express, which is like the local alternative weekly. And then there's like, you know, Asheville Blade, which is a, you know, they're a like political watchdog website. And then there's, you know, The Grit, which is another blog. It's like, I'm like, I guess like we're lucky because we've got a bunch of people who are doing investigative journalism in Asheville and like keeping the Island City Council where it needs to be. And you know, so those blogs, those news blogs have advertising functions, and we've got like a local NPR affiliate, you know, who, you know, we can advertise through. And we've got like another alternative radio station where they've got a community board and you can put your events on there. But it's like, okay, so each, what's hard right now is each entity that does stuff like, you know, Vaudeville, we've got to go to all of those sources and send the same copy to each one, like send that same press release to each one and get it on all their different formats, which is a task. It's a lot of admin. So
you guys got a board, and now this is something that actually I don't even know if I've had a chance to tell you about, but I'm really proud of this and I'm really excited about this. But I'm actually going to be a part of a board at the Grove Theater here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and that's going to be producing a variety show in 2022.
Yay!
So I'm super excited because, you know, I know a lot of talent, and I can't wait to, I know it can be a really good thing. You know, I know it can be a really good thing because, like I said, I've seen good things happen. You know, Asheville, Vaudeville, you know, definitely, you know, is one of them. But that's the other thing. I'm not over advertising on this board. It's not my expertise. We are bringing people in who know what they're doing because yes, it is a task. It's not, you know, as easy. Sometimes it sounds like it's easier than what it is, but it's not, you know, you've really got to crack that code.
Yeah. Well, and anytime you know, people see a show, like they've got no idea, like the, you know, the hours and hours over weeks of work that happens, because it's like, you know, okay, in my day job, I'm a paralegal. So it's like, you know, I'm used to keeping schedules and getting people where they need to be at the time they need to be there with proper materials. It is much harder to prep for a show than it is to prep an attorney for trial. Because you've got to, like, especially a variety show. Okay, I've got 12 performers. I need to communicate not only to them to get their bios in so I can advertise the show with an attractive picture and their bio, but I've also got to like make sure, okay, are they using Open Flame? Can we do that at this theater? Do they have insurance so that they can do their aerial act? Like what kind of site insurance does the venue require? So there's all that kind of stuff, and that happens like 3 and 4 months out from show. And then you've got to like 6 weeks ahead of time, send the press release to the newspaper, and 3 weeks ahead of time, send the press release to the blog site. And then the week of, you got to make sure that everyone knows what time call is and what time that they can meet with the tech guy and go through a sound check. And, you know, so it's like the space of time it takes to make like a 4-hour event happen is months in the development. I can't even imagine what it's like for y'all to do Secret City.
Oh my gosh, man, that has, and trying to do it in the middle of a pandemic. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's mostly admin, the art world. It's an awful lot of, did you read the email?
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this. Okay. Change subject a little bit. Every guest on the Abracadam podcast has to tell this. Claire Dima, can we hear a hell gig story?
All right, dun, dun, dun. Okay, it involves drunk girls and their skirts. Okay, so one time I got hired for an event that I think was pretending to be a Mardi Gras event, but I don't think the producer of the event knew what Mardi Gras was. They just knew that there was a lot of drinking involved and like a lot of purple and green got worn. Cause this was an event at specifically an event space. Like it's one of those places that you can rent and like go have your wedding. And yeah. The producer also hosts like kink events. So they do a lot of different stuff at this space, and it's a really cool space. But so they were doing a Mardi Gras thing, and they had been up to the Asheville Fringe Fest and seen an act that I was doing with a contortionist, where I was a magician and the contortionist was a doll, and I brought her to light.
Oh, that's
life. Cool. So I carried her onto the stage on my back, and then like we rolled her off and like did some stuff, and there's magic and the sword was involved, and then she comes to life. And she does an amazing contortionist act, and this girl is like the most crazy bendy thing I've ever seen, and it still freaks me out because she could like move her leg all the way around her body and bend herself over backwards in half. So Lindsay, who is very sweet, and was several years younger than me. And I felt very protective of her because she's a very sweet and innocent young lady who had not been in the presence of much alcohol use. So she was very sweet, and I was in need of protecting Lindsay in this debauched environment. We ended up separated after our piece because I went to the bathroom to pull off my fake eyelashes, because in case you've never worn them, false eyelashes are uncomfortable. So I went to the bathroom and was peeling off my falsies, and I realized that another woman in the bathroom was in deep gastric distress, in that she was drunk, so drunk, and was in the bathroom vomiting wildly. And missing her target. She was hitting mostly the floor, and it was so bad. And this is in the middle of an event that people have paid hundreds of dollars to be at. So I've done my set. I'm still in full schmata, like in like all the performance gear, and which for me at the time was like a metal belt with lots of heavy metal fringe on it, a bra with like metal coins and spikes on it. I've got spikes in my hair, porcupine quills in my hair, humongous like metal hoop earrings. Like I'm covered in spikes. I'm not somebody who should be taking care of anybody right now. But there's a woman in there vomiting, and I hear a thump, and I'm like, shit, she's passed out. So in my, $800 worth of clothing, and silk and metal spikes, I'm like looking under the bathroom stall, and I realize it's the Mardi Gras queen who is passed out in her own vomit in the bathroom. And apparently she and the Mardi Gras king were a couple in real life. And she discovered earlier that day that he was cheating. And she got mad and drunk before they were supposed to do this event together, where they are the king and the queen of the ball. So she is drunk and passed out, and I have to drag this woman up and make sure she's not dying in her own spew on the floor of the bathroom. So that was the worst of all events.
Freaking awkward. Weird.
Yep.
Well, okay. I'll tell you what. I don't think I've been lucky once again that I haven't had to deal with too many vomit situations. But definitely doesn't sound fun. Well, let's do this. Okay. Let's ask a thought-provoking question. Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. Listen to this. Now, I don't know. Time travel may be possible now. It may not be possible. We don't know. But if you could travel time, all right, and you could only make one trip, would you travel to the past, to any year you wanted to, knowing what you know now? Or would you travel to the future, knowing what you know now, and you could change one event in the future?
Okay, so here's the qualifying question. Do I have to stay there permanently? Like when I go back, am I staying back?
You're there. You get one trip. That's just, and that's either to the past or to the future. You don't get to come back.
Okay, so I'm definitely going backwards because we know at least human life can exist in the past. In the future, we don't know that we're going to have a functioning food system. So I'd rather not go forward.
There we go.
Now, I'm a cynic, so I don't think that we're going to be improving things much anytime soon.
Well, it is a little scary when you do think about the future and the big ginormous unknown. But let me ask you this then. So if you would go in the past, what year would you go to?
Probably prehistory, because I would want. Ooh. Okay, so I would want to be in a world where hunting-gathering societies were the norm, and we're first coming out, like when we're beginning to figure out agriculture, just because. Okay. That was a really, and you can't put a year on that because that was a really long period in the development of humanity. But I'd be really interested to see what pre-cultural cultures were like, because we know nothing about ourselves when we were hunter-gatherers aside from what we ate.
That's true.
And material culture is, you know, we can look back at like, okay, grave goods and whatnot, and say, okay, well, we think that this grave, this thing buried with this person in this tomb means a certain thing to that person. But I'd be really interested to see what humanity was like before we developed like complex symbol languages, before we developed like really complex like burial traditions. Like, you know, when we were creating what became culture and language, I'd be interested to go be there and see that. Because it's like, what, you know, we think in cultural symbols, we think in languages. What was it like to be there when those people were exploring the need to communicate in a different way, in a more complex way? Like, what needs were they meeting?
You know, that's a, first of all, very interesting answer. Probably the most interesting answer I've had ever on this podcast to that question. And a very unselfish answer, because Claire, if I went that far back, I would last probably about 20 minutes, because there's no medicine. There's nothing that would save me. And I don't know how to plan anything. I would die. But no, seriously, that was a fantastic answer. Now you got the listeners thinking like, wow, could we go that far back? That's cool. Let me ask you this. Well, let's do this. Actually, we're running up here on time, so let me just get right into it. First of all, any advice on anyone interested in maybe getting into belly dancing?
YouTube is not enough. There's a lot of really good information available out floating around in the world about belly dance. Be aware that belly dance is not a monolith, and this is a product of a millennia of cultural evolution. And one thing that happens in America is the people in the living cultures tend to get erased. Like, we're inclined to be like, oh, this is an ancient thing from such and such. And like, no, there's actual people who live in Egypt and Morocco, and this is a living culture for them. Go to them to learn. And the internet's made that possible. So be prepared to pay people for their skills and learn from them. And there are a lot of really amazing teachers, and there's services that you can subscribe to that have more than one teacher. Like, there's a group called Datura Online. And I would always suggest that people take classes from source culture teachers as much as possible. And there are a lot of places that will provide you a conduit to that. And if you live in a town that's got a university and they've got a cultural studies department or a history department, like, those people can help connect you to good information. Be aware of anybody that if you want to do like any kind of movement art, be wary of a teacher that says you should not study from anybody but them, because they're trying to limit you. And they're trying to make sure that you are paying them for the long haul, and that you're not exploring and evolving and maybe growing beyond them. You know, a good teacher should always be pointing you towards all the information available and not to just to what they have ready to hand. So there's a lot of really good information, and be prepared to like go to conferences and stuff. There's nothing like learning information and then being in a room full of people that care about some of the same stuff that you do.
Absolutely. Truth. Yep.
Yeah. And you will learn so much just by being in a room with other dancers. And you'll meet some really cool people and some people that, you know, you don't want to talk to again, and that's fine.
Sounds like a magic convention. Well, okay, well, let's do this. Where can the listeners find Claire Dima if they want to come see a show, if they want to come see Asheville Vaudeville? Where's the best place to find that out?
Well, Vaudeville is working on booking Bless Queen April because she is dealing with all the booking rigmarole. She is emailing with the Gray Eagle right now about future dates for spring. And they're still dealing with trying to like make sure everyone who had a contract pre-COVID has their date and can do their show. So we'll know dates for spring pretty soon, hopefully. And we'll put that up on the Facebook. If you're on the Facebook, come follow Asheville Vaudeville and you'll see whenever we do new stuff. I also dance regularly at Jerusalem Garden, which is a restaurant in downtown Asheville. It's live music and belly dance. We have not been performing since late summer because there was a surge of Delta variant in Asheville, and the restaurant just couldn't have us in there because it's a traditional format show. There's live music and the dancers moving around through the tables. It's the closest thing to a traditional belly dance presentation you'll see in this part of the state. You can certainly see really good traditional format belly dance in Atlanta. If anybody's interested in that, go see live belly dance in Atlanta because there's several cafes and restaurants there that host it, and the Atlanta dancers are awesome. Over in Knoxville, there's a place called Cairo Cafe, and if y'all want to see some excellent belly dance, go to Cairo Cafe in Tennessee because that fucking fire. It's a great room. Yeah, but I'm mostly at either Jerusalem Garden or doing Asheville Vaudeville or doing Fringe Fest stuff. I mostly do like event-based stuff at this point, just because there's not a lot of spaces where we can do a full belly dance presentation.
Well, hopefully things do come back. Let's hope, keep our fingers crossed. Okay. Do whatever we have to do. Sacrifice a goat, please. Whatever. Let's get it there. And also, you know, the Asheville Vaudeville. You know, you definitely, if you're anywhere near Asheville, you got to go see one of those shows too. Well, I tell you what, Claire, this has been a blast. I have really enjoyed this conversation with you. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Well, thanks for having a podcast, and thanks for coming over and doing vaudeville. We will get you on our stage as soon as we can.
Can't wait.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Claire Dima. Guys, if you are ever in the Asheville, North Carolina area, you have to see an Asheville Vaudeville show, and you absolutely want to see Claire do her thing. It's belly dancing at its finest. She's balancing swords on her head, all kinds of cool stuff. But definitely check out Claire's act. She is fantastic. Also, if you guys have not done so yet, be sure to like and subscribe to the Abracadam podcast. Yes, just what I was griping about earlier in this episode about views. Well, I need listens. But hey, I'm not pranking you. You're getting quality stuff here, folks. Not that garbage what's his head was doing. But definitely be sure to like, subscribe, follow the podcast, and hey, give me a review. I would love to hear your feedback. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Yes, awesome.
Will you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?